is Bruin Radio with Bridget Mitchell, and I am here with Bruce Ellis with the Insider of Southern Oregon.
Yeah, hey, how you doing today?
I'm doing good.
Well, thank you for having me on the show here this
of
week, too.
Of course.
Before we got going, I wanted to let you guys know that I really like what you're doing with the radio shows and everything like that. I mean, you have the Bruin, you know, the Brew Report and everything like that, which is very informative. But this conversation things, I've listened to it, and it's like very good, very good. It gives you, guys a chance to get your chops on doing interviews and stuff like that. But hey, I'm really enjoying the show, what you guys are doing, and that's why I wanted to come on here today, just let you know and talk about the Insider. So
thank you. We like to first start with the Chetco Bar Fire story.
Yeah.
Do you have one?
Yeah, I do. I do. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, actually, my girlfriend and I live 2.5 miles up North Bank, and so we got evacuated about, it was a week or two into it. You know, we were like one of the last evacuees out there that had to leave, but it was just kind of fate. Everything worked out good because I had gotten rid of my home and had I got a 30-foot, you know, trailer.
Oh.
And so the timing was impeccable. We just got done coming off the Pirate Festival. Yeah, out of the Pirate Festival into the frying pan is pretty much what happened there. Because, we got done with that. It was like 2 or 3 weeks after that, and had this trailer. So went ahead and we took it down to the port, Sport Haven Beach there, and parked it there for a couple of days when we had to go with the animals and all that good stuff. And we sat down there for a while. I mean, it's a pretty wild time for us around these parts. A lot of people, they lost a lot, you know. I mean, I noticed after this, the advertisers and everything like that, where I've lost a few advertisers and everything. I get, you know, you gain some, you lose some. That's how this rolls anyways. But I did notice a big impact on the community with the fire. And it did have an impact on everybody's business. And then some people are still now just recovering, I mean, from it. So, yeah, but ours was pretty simple, and we stayed out there for a while, and then we went, and it got a little expensive because we kept being evacuated longer and longer, and it wasn't cheap being out there, so we ended up being in front of a friend's house, parked in front of the friend's house and doing that until the whole thing went over. But that's pretty much our story. It was easy, then we were able to get back home, and everything was okay, so, and knock on wood, we're doing all right, and every day we watch them black logs going down the road. Yeah, they're still cleaning up that mess up there and everything, but That was it. Oh, yeah, that pretty much was the story on that one. A couple weeks, it was pretty rough.
So, tell me about the Pirate Festival.
Oh, the Pirate Festival. Well, see, that happened. The Pirate Festival was the first thing I did after I started the Insider of Southern Oregon. It was that year, it was the paper is 9 years old now. Pirate Festival is going on its 8th year. So, what happened there was after I started the paper, About 15 years ago, I got to remember track of time. When I was out in Virginia for a while, I've been out here 10 years, 11, 1 year in Utah, and I was out in Virginia before that, and I was the director of operations for the Virginia Renaissance Fair, and a big festival, and we traveled around, and so, you know, set up towns and everything like that, and then for the couple years before I left, we had it's actually there still, and it's getting bigger. It's on Lake Anna Winery out in Spotsylvania out there. You can get online and look at it. But I was director of operations for that, and so it got me into that world, you know, of understanding how to put on a show and all that good stuff of that kind of caliber, such as the Pirate Festival. So when I was out here, I was standing with Mike Moran. That's my partner in the Pirate Festival, and I was just trying to think of what to do, and we were standing there one day and looking out over the water down at the port, and we were just talking, and all of a sudden I just looked at it, and I looked at him, and I was like, what do you think this town would think of a pirate festival? And he was like, I think that's a great idea. And I was like going, and I said, why? Because what happened was back in the at the Virginia Renaissance Festival, there's 6 weeks. Each week is a themed weekend. And one of the ones that was one of the themes was a pirate weekend. Okay, all I got to say about that is when the pirate weekend happened, it was the craziest, the most attendance that we had all year round for all the other ones. It was the biggest one. There's a big, old, huge Renaissance Festival up there. Where is that? There's another one outskirts. And they used to come to ours, and we'd go to theirs because our Pirate Festival's all Pirate Weekends were on different weekends and everything like that. But that's how big it was. And so the Pirate Festival seemed like, since we're by the ocean, and a lot of Pirate Festivals that you see nowadays, they're in the middle. No water near them at all. So it seemed like a good fit, and it ended up being a great fit. So, we went down to the port and started working with them, and We're going on our 8th year now. It's one of the biggest festivals. It's we bring 15,000-20,000 people to the community and bring in a revenue of about $3 million. So, each for that one weekend. We load up the hotels. Now, I deliver my papers all over, and so I like to ask, you know, and I inquired. And I went all the way to the last hotel that anchors Way One or whatever that's at the end of town in Crescent City, all the way to there, and all the way up to Gold Beach, the Motel 6 up there, and they all had pirates staying at their because we loaded up here in town so fast. So I'm really proud of that, what it brought to the community. And why I started it was just to give something back to the community, because I'll tell you what, the Insider, it skyrocketed. I didn't even think about it, and you know, the way it took off, I just wanted to do something back for the community, and I wanted to do something big, and it's one of the biggest festivals we got here now. So yeah, there we go. Mission accomplished. That's how that went down, though. Yeah. So
nice.
Yeah. And over the years, we've been trying to make it better. Each year we improve it and everything like that. And you know, it's not a profit making at all. That's not what it was designed for. If I wanted to do that, I would put it in the middle of like Jackson or something up there, you know, an expo or something up there, you know, put it somewhere where there's a lot of people, where you'd have more like 50,000 people coming through the weekend or something like that. Yeah. You know what I mean? But that's not what it was all about. It was designed specifically for this area, for this town, for the community and everybody, and something for the tourists to do when they come here. And like I said, it turned out to be really successful.
Nice. What are some of the improvements you've made at the Pirate Festival?
Well, I'll tell you, pretty much the main thing, like I said, when it's not broke, you don't have to fix it, I guess, but because it came out right off the bat, we lucked out. But I mean, pretty much, we haven't had to do anything. The only thing I ever do is each year I get some different vendors on board or something like that, or we get a different entertainment group. We work on that. We like to work on getting the music and all that good stuff, you know, bands that kind of fit to it and everything, but we also like to feature, you know, new bands and everything like that at the festival as well. But yeah, not really much. We just keep, you know, throwing money into the entertainment and into, that's pretty much it each year, you know, the entertainment and to make sure everybody has a good time and all that, you know, that's what we focus on. And so really, yeah. And as long as the port's staying good, you know, they was actually the best this year. This last year we worked at the port was, it was perfect. It worked out great. Everything worked. We had in the years in the past, we've had a little bit water problem or electric problem or something like that. This last year, it was all fixed and it was all working beautiful. So there we go. I know with everything going on in the port right now, I'm throwing a positive out there. What can I say? But that way, it's a great thing. They, you know, they've done good for me. You know, the port has been really good to me and the Pirate Festival and everything. The weekend's perfect. We go ahead and take care of everything. I give it back. I give it back just the way I got it. So yeah, but. How about the Insider?
All right, you're starting it now. Okay.
Yeah.
More blabbing about the Pirate Festival.
Yeah, well, the Pirate Festival,
talking
about
the Insider.
Yeah, well, the Insider is my main focus, yeah.
Speaking of the Insider, if there's anybody out there who doesn't know what it is, would you like to explain what it is?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, and along with that, I'll, you know, there's kind of how it was created. It's kind of strange, too, but... what the Insider is an entertainment newspaper that covers all the entertainment all over Southern Oregon. I basically, even if I'm not in the towns, I cover all the events and everything. We put it in there. Each year it keeps getting better and better. In fact, this year I'm exploding it. I'm getting ready to take it out to Roseburg and Coos Bay and Ashland. And then I'll probably go out a little bit more like in Medford area and stuff like that down the line, because I'm getting ready to go on my 10th. You know, we're in our 9th year right now. And I said by my 10th year I wanted to have it pretty much all over Southern Oregon, which I'm right now. We're all the way up to Bandon, and then we go all the way up to Grants Pass. And so, nice. You know, that, yeah. But yeah, basically we cover the entertainment, do fundraisers, music, you know, all kinds of stuff. It's turned into, it's all positive. Just like the title says right here, it says, keep it real and spread the love. Keep it real part. These incidentally, Dream, Believe, Inspire, and Keep It Real and Spread the Love Across Southern Oregon have been on the paper since day one. It just ended up happening. That's all. It was really great. But that's what it is. And people can send me, you know, stuff and everything like that, and I'll put it in there. Human interest stories. I do a lot of writing. In fact, when I first started out, I was a busy beaver, man. I was writing like 13, 14 articles per issue, because I was... Now over the years I've been able to get people to do it for me and give it, you know, submit articles and stuff for me. But yeah, to keep it going and put content in it, you know, I had to do a lot of fancy footwork with the writing and everything, which I mean, I don't have any, I wasn't trained for this. it's kind of bizarre. In fact, I'll tell you what, the best way to describe this is to start from, you know, best way to start from the beginning on how this thing was created, because that will explain a lot and how far it's progressed. So basically what happened was I came out here and I've never been involved in a theater or anything like that. But the one lady who operated the Muse Theatrics, she happened to do the Renaissance Festival out here once a year. So I wanted to contact the person who did the Renaissance Festival. So I went and contacted her, Haley, and next thing you know, I'm working in her theater with her. And yes, and this is what some people don't know, how the paper was actually created. And what happened was, it was because I got angry. I found out when I got in the theater that I could act, write, direct with ease. I mean, the Muse was a small theater. It's called Muse Theatrics. And they would literally look at you. We had to do productions every week to keep the theater doors open. And I would literally, they'd look at you and go, okay, we need 3 skits from you this weekend. So there you go. We got to do a show. So come up with some stuff. So I started writing down. I just, give me a topic. And they give me a topic and I do the skit and everything like that. So boom, boom. So just to skip, go a little forward on that, because it really is crucial. So I found out I could do that. And so I started writing. Well, I did my first production, The Cat in the Hat. I took the cartoon and I turned it into hour, 15 minute, hour, you know, something like that, play for the stage, okay? Yeah. Well, you spend a lot of time doing that. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but that one took me 4 months to do, to get it all prepared and get it ready. And then we did the rehearsal and then get the show on. Well, when we went to go put it in the paper and send it, my buddy Bill Schlichting, he lost the paperwork or whatever. So I didn't get any promo or no advertising at all in the pilot or nothing. And so I was like angry, and I went in and I asked him, I go, what happened? And he goes, hey man, it must have slipped to the side. And I go, do you realize that, you know, I'm doing stuff like this? And then I started noticing, you know, that, and people do stuff like this, and if you're slipping aside, it's like, to you, it might be a mistake, but to somebody, it's devastating, you know? That my whole show that I just spent all that time, we had hardly anybody because nobody knew about it. So I was kind of, you know, bummed out. So it made me start looking into the entertainment of the newspaper part. So I went in and I talked to Charlie. And I asked him, you know, I said, hey, you know, how about I just take over your entertainment section? I said, I'll do a little boom, boom, and I'll do it for you. Cover some more entertainment. Just go out and do it. I'll do it for free. Well, who's going to pay for it? He says to me. I said, I don't. You guys are a paper. I don't know. I was just going to volunteer and do it, you know, like the fishing store and everything. So he didn't dig it. And he didn't want nothing to do with it. And I was like, okay. And so I went out and I started thinking about, you know, putting my own newspaper together. Started throwing it out there. Next thing you know, I got an investor. Somebody heard me, believed in it, put the money out there for me. Next thing you know, it was being printed by Coastal Copiers here, and it was a little this size, paper size, regular paper size. And the first paper was only 4 pages. And Jurassic Country was on the cover of the first paper. So anyways, so what happened was the paper started growing so fast that it all of a sudden I had, you know, pages and pages and pages. And then all of a sudden, within the first year, it got to this size. Immediately because of the advertisers and all the content that we had of all the entertainment going on and everything I wanted to cover. So, boom. So I covered this area for about a year, almost 2 years. I covered just Brookings, Gold Beach, Crescent City areas. And then I said, time to expand this thing out. And we blasted it out to Bandon and Grants Pass. And it's been going crazy ever since. So that's how it went down. It was like, I actually got to thank Bill Schlichting because of losing that paperwork, and Charlie for ignoring me, because, you know, I mean, I never looked at it that way until actually I was thinking about this yesterday. And it just dawned on me that I owe those guys a big thank you, because I wouldn't have started. And who'd have thought you'd have started, you know, I felt like when I started this thing, I felt like I created the perfect mousetrap. It was great. Everybody loved it. They embraced it. Everywhere I've taken it has been embraced by it. And see, then what happened was, remember, you know, like it was like 8 years ago, whatever, when this thing started, we were having a crunch with finance. You know, everybody's having problems, you know, money-wise and everything, big time. We were a little crunch there with everybody. So one of the main reasons I expanded it out that got me to expand it out to Bandon and Grants Pass was to cause a cross commerce. In other words, you know, they come down here to get away. You know, the valley comes down here to get away and check out the beaches. But do they go check out the shows? Do they know what's going on? You know? Maybe they might stick around and, you know, stay the night in a hotel and take in a show if they know what's going on. And it worked. That's what ended up happening. So it actually turned into a very useful tool, as well as fun to read and informative, and given all the events going on in the area, you know, and all that good stuff. People rely on it. They look at it like, you know, like this is their guide to what's happening. And the tourists especially love it when they come to town, because they can grab it and they get a hands-on wherever they're at. There's something going on in that town that's in the paper or whatever. And, you know, it, like I said, I try to cater to the area here, but in its own way, just like it's expanding out, I'll be going to 36 pages here again pretty soon full time, because I'll have to get those places covered, the entertainment and everything in those areas. So, but that's how it was started. That's how it all went down. And then the things that come out of it are, you know, like the Pirate Festival and stuff. I try to do positive things. And then, just like the TV show. I mean, you want to ask me about the TV show and everything, and I'm going to talk about that because it explains something. Candace Michelle was in the TV. She was the manager there, or one of the owners. I can't remember how it was. I think she was the manager there, Channel 9, for a while. And Mike Moran and Steve had a show that was called What's Happening and everything for a while here. And they were on TV, you know, every day. You know, it's on 6 noon and 7 at night, right? Every day it was on, and it's in all the hotels and everything on Channel 9. And Steve left. He got tired of it. So all of a sudden they were like, oh, hey, we need a new co-host. Well, me and Rick Waffler were in the lineup to be co-hosts. And what ended up happening is we sat around one day, and we were sitting there trying to figure it out. All three of us were there. We were there with Mike Moran. We were all talking and everything. And Candace and Mike, he was the owner at the time, he's standing back there, and they were watching us. And they watched us talking and everything like that, and going to town and everything, and just going back and forth off each other. And then when we were all done, and we were done talking, and realized they weren't saying nothing, we looked up at them and went, hey, so who do you think's going to be the co? And they were both, well, isn't that the show right there? So there you go. And the show was us three being together, you know, and everything, doing it. And we called it What's Going On. And we were on the air for like 3 years here and everything like that. And it was really good times. We went all over the place, did interviews, and we'd go into businesses and they'd film it in the businesses and give promotions. So it helped. And it was and then of course I pushed the heck out of the paper on there, you know, it was always on there because all our info came out of the insiders.
Walking around with the insider, a cup of coffee,
we got it. So it flowed into that. And so then, and then that went on for about 3 years. And then the station went down. The new kid that bought it, and it went down. Channel 9 went bye-bye, which is really sad because I'm telling you what, I got some MC jobs out of doing that. I did some MCing for like Lynn Anderson and the Hot Rods and Pam Tillis out there at Lucky 7 Casino because of it. Done all kinds of stuff that, you know, I never really got into, you know, before. And all of a sudden, you know, just like I said, I didn't even know I was acting. And all of a sudden I get up there and I'm a natural. I'm like, I'm in my 40s and I just realized that was kind of, you know, I mean, finding things out late, really, you know, just like creating this paper at this time in my life. I'm sitting there going, man, I wish I had thought about this about 30 years ago. It would have been great. But yeah, we did the show there for a while. And when it went down, a few years later, coming by and I run into, they started the KCIW was getting started there, the computer and everything. They'd been going for a little bit on the computer. And I ran into Candace Michelle, and she was the program director for Channel 9. So we worked together already, and I ran into her, and she says, hey, I got this show going. You want to do something on the show? And I go, okay. She told me to create a show and then send it to her. So I came up with the Insider Report, and that's been going on for almost 4 years now, or 5 years now. We've been 4 years on the computer. Yeah, and then 1 year on the radio show, because I've taped a whole bunch of, I got the Magical Musical History Tour too, and I'm almost on my year. Yeah, that's right, I'm about 48 now that I've taped. Okay, so yeah, there you go. Jeez. Time flies when you're having fun, huh? But that's how it happened. That's how that happened. And the reason I had to put it that way is because Candace, if you notice what the times are for the Insider Report, I sat there and I looked right at her and I went, how come those times seem so familiar to me? And she goes, because that's when you guys' show was on, 6, noon, and 7. So the Insider Report is on for in homage to the old show. That was at Candace. We've been good friends for a long time, and she just did that one. I thought that was pretty clever that she did that. But, yeah, so much came out of you know, starting the Insider Report, and everything's positive. And that's what, I mean, the Insider Southern Oregon, and everything is really positive, and that's what I like to try to keep in this. I mean, even when I ran for mayor here about 5 years ago. Not because I have anything to do with political or anything like that. I did it for other reasons. I did it because even though I was doing an Insider of Southern Oregon, you know, an entertainment newspaper, mm-hmm. people in town would come to me and ask me, you know, tell me what's going on, what they're mad at the community about or anything like that. And I'm sitting there going, I'm an entertainment newspaper. What are you asking me?
What are you talking about?
Yeah. And so so I sat there and I was like, okay, I'll see what I can do or whatever. And I just kind of got in there. And next thing you know, I'm running for mayor. I'm still, if I'd have won, I'd have been in trouble. But I was like, I mean, I was getting a posse behind me just in case. And I mean, I tell you what, I got 800 and something votes and he got 1,200 votes. So, I was right close there. But I couldn't even put that in my paper. See, I shy away from everything I got. The paper is totally positive all the way around. So, but yeah, see what I mean? Just things just opened up doors. I mean, and it's just amazing. It's like the reason I wanted to come on here was just so I could say, follow your dreams. You know, if you have something you want to do, go for it. You know what I mean? You can make things happen. Even when you're old like me, you can make things happen at older age. Just make them happen. That's all. But, this has really been just, it's been great. It's been a wild ride. And the paper, it's just going to get bigger and bigger is what I can see. And I get it all over the area eventually. So
another festival that I know that you were in was the Bacon Fest. Do you want to tell us about that?
Well, yeah. It's interesting. David Skaggs, he created the Bacon Fest, and he wanted to do it, you know, to bring just something to the community for one weekend and honor bacon, of course, you know.
Yeah.
So he started the Bacon Fest, and the first year he took it up there to Salmon Run. He did it at the golf course, and so I went up to it, and I saw it and everything like that, and I didn't have nothing to do with it other than promoting it at the time. But I thought it was really interesting, and so I did want to help him try to carry it on the next year. And really, basically, it just fell through because I couldn't get enough vendors on board or sponsors on board because they didn't want to take a chance at a new festival. There was the Saturday markets that most of them were at and everything like that. So I had every kind of different answer. And then sponsors were really hard to get to because it was brand new. And even though I, you know, did the Pirate Festival and everything like that, it was really rough. So we weren't able to do the Bacon Fest. And I pretty much put that one on the back burner right now. If David, you know, comes through in the future and wants to do it and we're able to get the finances together to do it. It was a fun event. It was really cool. A tribute to the bacon is always a good thing. You know, they had all kinds of great things going on there, contests and everything with bacon involved. So yeah, it was a good time.
Speaking of things being on the back burner, tell us why you no longer run the Slammin' Salmon.
Well, it's funny because I was that guy who didn't even get to run it at all because the 2 months, or what the heck, a month after I got it, or not even, it was real close, right when they gave it to me and I got it, fishing went out, so we couldn't have one. So Checo Brewing ended up just doing, because they do their Saturday markets down there, they ended up just doing an extra special Saturday market type thing and had some bands there and everything like that. So they did a really nice job down there on the weekend. And then I'll tell you, the Pirate Festival, I had myself way out there. This is one thing you learn when you do stuff like this. Like I said, it begets this and it begets that and that begets that. But your time is your time. And when you're sitting there trying to get sponsors and trying to get vendors and trying to do this and get everything set, musicians and all this stuff set up for one particular event, you know, then all of a sudden you got to double it up. And remember, the Slammin' Salmon was 2 weeks after the Pirate Festival. Really hit me hard. I mean, just thinking about it, the first year was almost a blessing in disguise because, not for the area, of course, but it was for me because I don't think I'd have been able to get anything together in time that first year because it was, you have to send the fishing thing, you know, fishing derby, you know, promos out at the beginning of the year. So all to all the magazines all over the United States, you know, and everything like that. So I had no time to do any of that. It wouldn't have been anything. And then my brains came around to me, and reality spoke in, and I decided just to give it up. And the Checo Brewing, they were there. They would have gotten it if I wouldn't have gotten it. So I called them up, said, did you guys want to go ahead and take on the Slammin' Salmon? And they said, yes, they did. So let's see what they can do this year. But I gave it to them plenty of time so they could do all the fish and derby stuff they had time to do and everything, as long as they don't cancel it. But what we were talking about doing, and which I think they'll probably do, is just doing any kind of fish derby. bottom fish, whatever, just have a derby, you know what I mean, for the area. So hopefully they'll be able to do something like that this year. I'll promote them 100%, back them 100%. I said I got vendors and stuff from the Pirate Festival that'll be interested in joining them and all that good stuff. So I'll do everything I can to help make that a big festival, you know. But yeah, I just didn't want to be the one doing it. So yeah, I said, it's not my headache anymore. Get it? The fishing derby headache? Yeah. Okay.
Play over. So what is the Insider Report?
Well, basically what it is it's pretty much a derivative of the Insider of Southern Oregon, other than I keep it local because it's a local radio station, even though it's on the computer. You know, everybody can listen to it. I pretty much keep it on this level right here because for the radio show, 100.7 on the FM, it only reaches out this area. And pretty much KCIW is designed for this area, so I designed a show for this area. Henceforth, it's only a half hour. If I was talking about hope everywhere, then it would be a lot longer, that's for sure. But yeah, basically I just cover the events, music, fundraisers, and stuff like that, that I... Either people submit the stuff to me, they'll send it to me email, or I pull it out of the paper. You know, it's something that came through to me, an article or whatever. So I put together a show every week, come together with about a half hour show, trying to cover every topic that I can. I mean, every event and everything going on, which in the area here, believe it or not, I'll tell you what, when I first started out with this paper, I wouldn't have had too much to talk about, but now we've got a lot to talk about. There's plenty to talk about in the community. There's events going on all year round. There's music going on all year round. I mean, there's just something new happening all year round, you know? And so that's why I try to get it out here on the Insider Report. That's what it basically was designed for, was just to, you know, and to plug the paper. Shameless plugs are always good. Shameless plugs are always good. I love
promotion, self-promotion.
It's all good. Yeah. Yeah. Well, hey, if I don't promote myself, then nobody knew who I am. If nobody knows who I am, why do they want to pick up and listen and read my paper?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's why I put myself out there. So I put myself out there so that people know who I am for a reason. I do that because I want this paper to grow as big as it can and to do the job that I designed it for. And so far, so good. We're working really good. It's going well. Yes. So the Insider Report, just another little derivative there of it. So, you know, but that's a local thing. So, yeah. Yeah, it's fun. I love doing it. I've been doing that for 4 years. I think it's still the top show on the computer. I believe it's the top number one show still. Yeah, I've been doing that.
No, Bruin. Yeah.
you know, if you guys promote yourself a little bit more, you might be competing with me. No, but I'm very proud of that. You know, when Tom told me that a while back, I was very proud of that fact, you know, that was able to... People are actually listening. So that's I like that a lot, you know. So, because once again, if they ain't listening, then they're not going to hear what I have to say. So I want to promote, you know. And
exactly.
It's another tool right there to get the word out.
Speaking of your promotions, I hear you talking about Little Prince.
Oh, yeah.
Who is that?
Little Prince is my grandson. My only grandson. Yeah, my daughter Mariah. I brought her out here. We didn't meet until 18. Different life, you know. Her mother took her and went, woo, we weren't married. Mom took her, so I never had my daughter in my life at all. And when she turned 18, I found her down in Sacramento, and I brought her up here, and she's been up here since. And she got in the theater with me, and we had all that stuff. And then we had a little falling out and everything, and then the next thing you know, she's pregnant. So, you know, everything. And so all of a sudden, you know, she gets back together, you know, me and her, our estrangement gets... fixed, you know, we straighten out what our problems were and everything like that. And she has my little grandson, and that's who the little prince is. I call him Little Prince because it's actually Prince Valiant. My uncle called me Prince Valiant when I was a young kid, his age, my uncle, my favorite uncle, he used to call me Prince Valiant all the way into my adulthood. And so that I just kind of dubbed him. I just started calling him the Little Prince, you know, and everything like that, you know, because everybody's king, you know, your home is your kingdom, you know, every man's home is his castle, and I'm the king of my castle, so there's my Little Prince right there. But yeah, it's just a really term of endearment because I just love him to pieces, and he's a Little Prince, I'll tell you. So, yeah.
This is Bridget Mitchell, and you're still listening to the insider of Southern Oregon's own Bruce Ellis on KCIWLP out of Brookings, Oregon, broadcasting on 100.7 FM.
That's it. I refer to a lot of my family on the show. I try to keep the show, the Insider Report. I talk about my experiences when I start the show out. I talk about what I did that weekend. You know, what did you, you know, because I'm trying to develop a one-on-one with the listener.
Yeah.
And then I'll sit there and I'll talk about that. Then I'll get into the meat and potatoes of what's going on, everything like that. And then I'll pull out, you know, but I'll talk about my family, you know. I'll talk about my girlfriend Sabina, you know. I'll talk about my daughter Mariah and her boyfriend Jackson or anybody that comes in or dealt with that weekend or if we went out and saw a show or whatever. I just, boom, boom, just to let everybody know that, hey, we're in the same boat. We're doing the same thing. We're getting out and, you know, enjoying the events and doing stuff too, you know, getting out there. And, yeah, I think it brings a one-on-one personal. And if you notice, if you listen, I also added two more things to it. I got Bushwhacker Bruce, right?
Would you like to talk about that?
Bushwhacker Bruce. It's a character I actually created for TV, and I did a TV show called Bushwhacker Bruce, and it aired for a month here. It was during the time we were on the air, and I created this show, and it was a guy who thought he was Australian, but he wasn't, not even from Australia. And everything, you can guarantee that everything he said about something, did you know, as a fact, is not a fact at all. But that character, so I did a show, and it played, like I said, for a month, and it was fun. I still would like to take it somewhere. I'm still trying to develop a show concept in that, you know, with the character. But I wanted to bring him out, you know, because yeah. A lot of people, you know, people that did see the show and everything, still go, hey, how's old Bushwhacker Bruce doing and stuff? So I still hear stuff from it, so... I decided to create the Bushwhacker Bruce, you know, bit of weird history. But the thing about it is this time Bushwhacker isn't lying. That weird history is true history that I'm talking. Okay, that's what the fact is. And I mean, those are true stories that I'm finding. I go back in history and I find out something that happened. And then I tell the story with Bushwhacker Bruce. And then I have a little something funny at the end to say or whatever to go with it, you know, because he's a character and all that. So it's one of my fun characters. I like it. And what's really funny is that one's real. Then the other thing that I write, is called, I've just been handed this news bulletin, and that I put in there, and I read this news story, right? And the news story sounds real, and then I get at the bottom, and I'm using old adage, or I switch an adage up, or I play on words is what it basically is. But the thing about it is, just a couple weeks ago, I didn't even realize it, that I was sitting in there, and everybody was in there, and I was recording the show, and Jeff and Tom and Rose were sitting right there. And I was doing my hand in this news bulletin, and I started laughing, and I realized that, I go, hey, you guys, because they were looking at it, and they go, wow, and they were looking at me like the story I said was real. They're going, wow, that's incredible. And I'm like going, hey, you guys, you know that's not real, right? You know I made that up. They go, no. And I was like, it just dawned on me then that maybe everybody out there thought it was a real story because I never said nothing afterwards. I just did it. I made those stories up and everything like that. So now what I do at the end, I go in unrelated news. This story was just a figment of my imagination or something like that. You know? Just add a little fun to the show, just to bring a little bit more, you know, because we're just straight up show, you know, and you know, you got to keep improving, just like I do with the paper. You just got to keep improving it, you know, yeah, as Mr. you get Jordan. Going along. Yeah. But yeah, that's that one right there. I would love to do a Bushwhacker Bruce show one day, though. Again, that was fun.
We should do something like that with Miss Bryant. That sounds like fun.
Yeah, I'll talk to you guys about anything down the line if you want to collaborate on something. Yeah, I mean, I write all that good stuff, so yeah. I'm scripting out the Coastal Music Awards right now, so.
Right now we're doing bad scenes where it's two people are going out on a date and it goes horribly wrong.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's fun.
That's great. Well, like I said, I love what you guys are doing. I listen to your stuff all the time. My dog isn't the only one that listens to the dang show.
At least I know that.
And another show that I have is called The Magical Musical History Tour. And, of course, I play on words there as well. I seem to like to play with words, but everything like that. But I came up with that from the Beatles' Magical Musical Mystery, you know, everything like that.
Oh,
but okay. Basically what it is I go back in time, grab artists, and do a whole hour of their music, throwing a little bit of history on them in between and everything. And pretty much I like to stick, I probably have about, for the hour, I have about 5 to 6 minutes of dialogue and the rest is all music. I try to really keep it down to just boom, boom. And I've done all kinds of artists, Janis Joplin, Billie Holiday. I just keep Frank Sinatra, all these people. I just keep going back, you know, here's something and I'll just grab it. And it's really fun. I mean, just finding all the material and everything like that is a blast, you know, and everything.
I think I've actually heard of it, too.
Yeah, you heard of that one? Yeah, it's a good show. It's actually, this week we got going on the Fabulous 50s. It was on this morning, Thursday at 7, it was this morning, but rambling on there. Anyways, this week's show was the Fabulous 50s, and I started from the 20s. Usually I do artists, and then when I kicked it up now, and I went from the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, you know, and the 70s. 70s was a wild one, so I'm thinking that one, I think I'm gonna throw out different stuff on there. But basically what it is it's trying to introduce people to music maybe that they haven't heard in a while, artists that they haven't listened to in a while. I try to pick, that's why I don't do like Elvis and stuff like that, because Elvis is still, everybody still knows who he is and everything. I try to grab, you know, people that, you know, that you don't hear much anymore of and everything. So it kind of brings it back for the youths. Yeah. For the youths out there, so they can hear this stuff, you know, and go, hey, I like that cat. That's pretty good stuff, you know. I know a lot of kids your age that have heard Frank Sinatra and like Frank Sinatra, you know, and heard Dean Martin. I did the Dean Martin show. Got a lot of reviews on that one. People love that show. So that's the magic of musical history, too. It's a blast. I love doing it.
It's awesome.
Good times, yeah.
So what advice would you give someone trying to run an entertainment radio show like this?
Oh, like the Magical Musical History too, or like the Inside, or like the Inside Report to do a show. Basically, it's just getting a lot of information. You just got to be on it all the time. I mean, it's not just doesn't, you got to do a lot of research. It's a lot of research. That's what advice I would say is to do your research, do your timing for your, like one of the things that the our producers like about me is I script my shows out to a time. To exact time, so we don't have any. Yeah, I script, you know, right to exact time and everything. Like, yeah, this is my advice. Here you go. Work with your producers. Work with the people that are around you. If you have writers, everything, work with them one-on-one. Don't just grab what they got and read it. Learn it. Learn how they got, you know, your information that you're going to give out. Do your research and know your research. That's pretty much it. Just kind of, like I said, the producers really appreciate the fact that I do that, that I put the get it down to an exact time like that, and a lot of people just go in and ran or whatever. I mean, they try to stay as close as they can. But, yeah, help out the people that are around you doing the show and everything like that. But pretty much other than that, I think the shows that we got going on, I've listened to how everybody's got their own style. I do mine in a different way. Like I said, I script it out, and I put the music in, and then I send it to them and everything like that. And when I do the Insider Report, I have it all right there so everybody can see it. The producers can see what I've got going on. And, that'd be it. I would just say just work with the people, all the people around you that are involved in the radio station with you, because there isn't really, if you're doing it, you know, it should come natural. I'm just saying it's almost like it does. You know, it comes natural. Yeah. If you're in the business, and that's what I found, because I fell into this. I've never trained for any of this stuff that I've done. None of this. I all self-taught myself, you know, going along. Just happened to know how to write and took typing in school. So there we go. But yeah, that's pretty much it right there. You know, just try to grab stuff. If you're going to sit there and do like a music show, grab something that people will want, that not everybody's doing. You know, try to make it different. Keep it different. If you do the same thing somebody's doing, do it a different style. Do it your own way and everything. Make it different. You know, you can play the same song, but what you said before that song and afterwards might make the difference in somebody just listening to that song, you know, and everything like that. Because, like I said, with the Magical Musical History Tour, I like to sit there and give a bit of history of what's going on behind the person, so that way they're getting educated as well as entertained. So there you go. Keep it entertaining. That's what I have to say. Keep it entertaining.
What about promotion? Do you have any advice on that?
Yeah, go through the Insider of Southern Oregon.
I knew he was.
You can never have too much promotion. I mean, the internet right now, you know, that is like social media is like the thing. It's big time. I mean, all the businesses that advertise in my paper with me, first thing I talk to them about is, you got a Facebook page? You got something that pushes your business out there, and everything promoting is promoting, you know, every paper, every venue that you can possibly do, you should do to promote your business. And the reason I say that is, and you should keep on doing it, is because people have a tendency to look over things, but when they see something for like the third time, when they read a newspaper for the third time, they pay attention to that ad after seeing it the third time. It's weird. It's a statistic thing or something I read about. And I was like going, okay, I got you. So that's why I have advertisers in for 6 months. I do a six-month thing because there's no sense in me going, you know, because I include articles, promotions, and everything with my paper when it goes out there. Well, if somebody just did 1 month, what, I'm going to do a whole article on them and devote all this promote time and everything, and then they bail, you know, and stuff?
Yeah.
No, well, let's make sure, you know, you be serious, and I'll be serious about promoting your business. And that's why it's filled, the insider is filled up with all the advertisers I have in it, is because I take care of them, and they take care of me, and promoting is what it's all about. That's what I am. I'm probably one of the biggest promoters in town, turned out. That's what this thing began also. Yeah, because I'll take somebody's business and I'll push it on Facebook everywhere because I do it through the paper. And I can push my stuff everywhere because it's the insider paper. And all the sites allow me to go on their site with the stuff. So I promote businesses, the music events, everything that's going on. So in a roundabout way, all of a sudden, it's promoting. I'm all about promoting. That's it right there. You know, all of a sudden their businesses are getting seen and people are getting coming in. Just like I'm doing an Insider Weekly Business promo now. If you go on the Insider of Southern Oregon on Facebook page, Insider Weekly Business promo is going on every week. Like ABC Creations, $25 gift certificate. I promote it for 5 days. Everybody likes. I promote it all over Facebook saying, go to the Insider of Southern Oregon. Like that, then you can get involved and like and be involved in the you know, in the biz promo and be a lucky winner. Do you know, when I first started that thing, I was kind of low on, I wanted to get some more people, you know, knowing about the paper and getting on board on my Facebook page. 600 people came in the year that I did this first promo, about 3-4 years ago when I first did it. 600 people came on that year just because of that promo. Just because of it. So yeah, it's all about promoting. Is anything you do, if it's worth doing, and you you want it to be out there, then you got to promote it. And yeah, that's what I'm there for. I'm, you know, that's what the Insider of Southern Oregon was created for. That's what you know, the local newspapers and stuff utilize whatever you can. I would say on promoting, especially shows. That's what I mean. When I it was funny because old Uncle Charlie there, the pilot, I'd go in and talk to him because I try, you know, and he'd say that he said that I was competition. And I said, you're getting that word wrong. I'm not competition. We complement each other. You're saying that wrong. You're not seeing what I'm saying. How come if I'm putting that theater on my cover of my page, their production, and you're putting their theater production in your paper, isn't that working together? Developing, trying to put to help these people, you know, to get their show out there and everything like that. So me and him always had it, went back and forth like that. But you know, promotion, yes, it's all about the promoting, because you can never have too much promoting.
So tell us about your musical background.
Well, what happened was back in the day when I was younger, I played in two garage bands. I played I played like just rhythm guitar in the background, and then for the other band I played bass and sang. I sang for both bands, but I did play bass guitar. That was back when I was 17. So then we flash forward back up to nowadays and everything, like about, geez, I guess it was a couple years, 2 years ago. I haven't been able to do theater in a long time because of the paper. You know, I love theater. I've done tons of productions and everything, I got written and all that good stuff, and it's just like all of a sudden the paper took over, life took over, and I couldn't do theater anymore because it takes up a lot of your time and everything. I just didn't have the time to do it. So I'm sitting there going, but hey, I'm an entertainer. I like to perform and I got to get out there and perform. That's why I like to volunteer for gigs and everything I got, because I like to get out there. All of a sudden I'm sitting there, it was my birthday, and I said, well, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to go up and I'm going to go to the River's Inn and I'm going to do that open mic night. And I'm going to get up there and I'm going to sing 3 songs on my birthday. And I'm either going to stink and I'm gonna go, who cares, yay, it's my birthday, or it's gonna be good and I'm gonna go, yay, it's my birthday. So I did that. I went up there and I got on stage, and Troy Spence Jr. just happened to be one of Spence Brothers. He just happens to be up on the stage there doing the guitar that night, and everybody was up there. I got up and did 3 songs. It rocked the house. Had a good time. And I mean, this was without rehearsing or anything. You just got up there and did it, you know, and stuff. And the band was on it and everything, and it felt really good. And so I went home, and I'm sitting there thinking, and all of a sudden, 2 days later, you know, because here's the one thing. When you're going to do something, especially when you're going to jump into it and you want to create something, you want to get it done, go for the most professional people you can to help you do it. I went for the Spence Brothers. I told them, I went to one of their rehearsals and I said, hey, listen, I got this idea I want to do called the Purple Days Experience. And I want to do a flashback to the 60s and do Doors and Jimi Hendrix and all that music and everything. And they said, okay, sounds good. So we did. And that was just to get me back on stage again because Bruce wanted to get a fix every once in a while. That was pretty much it. Why I created the band was just to get on stage again. But it ended up being, we played the town, you know, and everything like that. But I found that I wasn't really digging the bar scene for the Purple Days Experience because I had a little bit more to it that I wanted to do. I actually never really got to accomplish, still haven't accomplished yet what I actually designed the band for.
Yeah.
But because I wanted to give a little bit of history in there too as I was doing the songs and everything. But band just wanted to play, so what the heck, we go play what the band wants to play. So I got up there, we did, we've played Lucky Seven Casino a couple times, had our names up on the marquee and all that good stuff. That was really cool and good stuff. So yeah, haven't played for a while, but I actually was talking to Wendy Capitano and I'm going to put together another band. You know, I'll do the Purple Days Experience with the Spence Brothers whenever they, you know, can. But they got themselves going so wild about these, man, some of these musicians around here, like I said, they've got so many, something going on everywhere. They're playing with all kinds of different people. It's funny. It's not just one band. But we're going to create a band. So we will be coming out. I'm not sure what the name of the band will be yet and everything, but we're going to be doing some classic rock and some good stuff, duet stuff and everything like that. So you're going to get out there. It's not over yet. Yeah, so got some music. But hey, you got to keep it real. You know, you got to keep having fun. We only go around this life once. You got to have fun while you're doing it. Make it count. Make it count.
So we understand that you've met some pretty well-known stars out there.
Yeah, actually, it was really cool because growing up in the 70s, when I was about 14, we moved to Palm Springs, California. And home of a lot of movie stars, Bob Hope and all those guys live out there and everything. And it was pretty wild. The first star we met was Frank Sinatra. Me and my dad did. And it was really cool. What happened was we were carpet cleaning. My dad had a carpet cleaning business. And we're sitting here stopped at this stop sign. And my dad passed away a few years back, but we used to laugh about this all the time. We were sitting parked at a stop sign, and all of a sudden, this Cadillac pulled in front of us, blocked us. And then another one pulled behind us and blocked us from behind. And we're sitting out in the middle of the desert, you know, we're out nowhere. And we're like going, what the heck, are rival carpet cleaners out here or something? What the heck they got? What the heck is going on? Well, these guys come out, and I swear, they looked exactly like right out of Goodfellas. They come walking out, they had the Italian horn necklaces and the whole thing. And, you know, they come walking up, and the one guy comes over to my side of the door, and the other guy goes over to my dad. And my dad at this time, man, I got my son in here with me, and what the heck is going on, you know? I kid you not, the guy walks up, and he looks at my dad, and he goes, does you guys clean carpets? Just like that. Does you guys clean carpets? And my dad, we're in a carpet cleaning truck. It says carpet cleaning on it. Yes. Does you have time to come do Mr. Sinatra's carpet? Well, absolutely. We were going home. Absolutely. So we followed him to Frank Sinatra's house. Ended up going in. He was having a party that night. So he wanted us to clean this one room for him. So we got to meet the man himself. Go in there and meet Frank Sinatra. Talk to him and everything like that. And clean the carpet and leave. Well, Frank Sinatra's Catholic. And he went to my church. In fact, he paid the mortgage off at my church. He paid the mortgage off of the church in Cathedral City there in California. So I literally sat in church with him several times. I would run into him. There was other stars that I talked to that would sit there and everything. Even though he's Frank Sinatra, it was cool. But basically, pretty much all I'd do is I'd see him and I'd go, hey, Mr. Sinatra, how you doing? And he'd go, hey, you kid. And that's what I did. Sat with him in church and stuff like that, midnight mass a few times, and that's pretty much it. But he was one of the, you know, it was really, man, to meet Frank Sinatra. And then Red Skelton, you see, being out there, I worked in several businesses, security, you know, and just helping people out, you know, and stuff like the Bob Hope Desert Classic.
Yeah.
Went out and did first, I was on the first tee off, met Glenn Campbell and Tammy Tucker when they were dating because he hit his ball over by me. Seen presidents, you know, Nixon and Ford and Reagan, you know, out there, seen those guys. Did work at Ford's house, delivered ice. We used to work for an ice company, it was a family-run business, and the dad did awesome ice sculptures, so we'd deliver ice sculptures. Bob Hope's house we delivered ice sculptures up to. Got a tour of the house by his wife, Dolores. It was very cool. Went to Elvis's house. We always knew where he lived up there on Rose Hill, but he had passed a few years. But we delivered ice up there, and I walk in. I go, okay, obviously this is Elvis's house. It was Lisa Marie's 16th birthday party. So, boom, there you go. I mean, just being down there, you don't know. You could be standing in a line next to somebody and not even know it, you know, or talking to him down there. But Red Skelton is my favorite one because we were good friends. We were friends. and he was my hero. I idolized him when I was young, about 8 years old. I did him for Halloween. I did one of his bum character. Did that, the hobo character for Halloween. Well, my grandma lived in Palm Springs at the time, and she ran into him at a restaurant. And so I have the autograph to this day. She got me an autograph on the napkin, Red Skelton, you know. And so then we flash forward, boom, and I'm living in Palm Springs, and my buddy, another job I had was a mechanic at a Rolls Royce shop. Okay, Rolls Royce and Jaguars is what we worked on. And I'm sitting there working on this Rolls Royce, this nice silver shadow one day, man, it's a sweet thing. My buddy, him and his dad owned the shop, and I went to school with him and his sister and everything, and he comes walking in, and he goes, hey, you know whose car you're working on? I go, no. And he goes, it's Red Skelton's. I go, wow, awesome, that is great. And he goes, you want to know something else? And I go, what? He goes, they knew I was a big fan. I'd mentioned it. Well, they didn't tell me that his dad was like Red Skelton's best friend. Red Skelton comes walking in just to see me that day. Not pick up his car. We were still working on it. He came in just to meet me that day.
Wow.
And it was like, what an honor. And I mean, and then we became friends after that. He come into the shop all the time because he'd come talk to, his dad and everything like that. It was like, oh, it was just, he's such a sweetheart. He was really just such a wonderful guy. I was very sad when he passed. I was back in Virginia when he passed. And I wasn't able to attend the funeral or anything like that. But yeah, some stars like that. I'm sitting there one day working on a car, and there was several bays, and the bay next to us over here, they worked on Mercedes. So I'm sitting there working on a car one day, and all of a sudden, you know Baloo the bear, right? Out of the Jungle Book, you know?
Yeah.
You hear the voice, right? So I'm sitting there, all of a sudden I hear Baloo the bear next door. I peek around the corner, it's Phil Harris. Baloo the bear. That's awesome. I mean, it's Phil Harris who's right there, and he's having his car worked on, and hey, so I got met Phil Harris. So it's like just roundabout ways, you know, like I said, just being able to have those experiences was really incredible to meet some famous people like that and get to rub elbows with them. And then when I moved out to Virginia, I went to work at a Nissan Pavilion, which is a music venue out there, big music venue out there. And so I worked the weekends out there, and I met stars, rock stars, Reba McEntire, Jimmy Buffett, you know, I mean, Peter Frampton, just name them. Gwen Stefani. Oh, Gwen Stefani. That was so cool to meet her. When her concert was over, I was watching the security at the door that they go out to the trailers, and it was raining. So here comes her and her bodyguard walking down this tunnel that is only like 5 foot wide. So they're coming down this tunnel, and, I go, hey, Mr. Stefani, you might not want to go outside because they didn't have an umbrella. I go, it's raining. You know, you just got done singing. So the bodyguard looks at me and he goes, hey, you stand here and talk to Mr. Stefani while I go get the umbrella. So here I am. Here I am like this, standing next to Gwen Stefani. Hey, it was great.
Hi,
I mean, hey, actually, I didn't play the dumb butt. I mean, I actually kept composure and everything, but oh, that was like the closest. It was great. She was a sweetheart. It was great just sitting down with a one-on-one. Just stuff like that. You know, I'd be out there and just wanting to... I had a habit of wanting to say hello to everybody that came through there. Okay? And they didn't care that you did that. I mean, I would walk up to them and say, hey, how you doing? You know, just want to meet you. You know, whatever like that. And the one that the boss told us not to do was Jimmy Buffett.
Hi.
Because Jimmy didn't like it. He didn't like people coming up and talking to him, I guess, just random people, the workers and stuff like that. He didn't want that happen. And but he did say, unless he talks to you first. Okay, so then I get put, which at the time I didn't think was very cool because usually I was on stage inside and everything, but I was on the back dock because he had all this producing equipment and everything. He had his own producers and everything. There's all kinds of equipment out on the back area. So I was watching that. And I'm sitting there going, how the heck am I going to meet Jimmy Buffett and get him to say hello to me? He was over having lunch around these trailers on this other side at a tent that I could see off of the dock. And I seen him over there having lunch. And all of a sudden I saw him get up and start heading around the trailers, and he was going to be coming my way because he was going to be coming up these stairs. So basically what I did is I timed it just right to when he was coming up the stairs, I was going down the stairs. The man had no, right into each other, you know, right there, man. So he had no choice. And he said hello. And I was like, hello, Mr. Buffett. Have a good show tonight. And I walked away and I was like, yeah, my record stays intact. I thought I was going to lose my record because I always said hello to everybody. The only one who was, because she had such a, Jessica Simpson.
Oh.
She had such an entourage around her that there was no way I could meet her or say hello or anything because she just had people all over all the time. Yeah, it was just interesting, you know, you put yourself, it's funny, it seemed to be the jobs that I was doing that it got me in the most of, to meeting a lot of these people, was just being in the right place. And then, yeah, that's it right there, doing the security back there. That was great, being security on backstage, you know, on the stage with the actual artist, wow, Tim McGraw and all that good stuff, you know. I mean, like I said, whoever came through that year, I got to see her meet, you know. So, yeah, I dig it, you know, and I am starstruck. I'm a nut like that. I'm such a cornball when it comes to that stuff. Because I do. I love stars. I do. I think they're great, what they've accomplished, you know, not every one of them, but, I mean, I just accomplish the works and stuff like that. And if I actually get to meet somebody who I admire, it's really cool, you know, that I, you know, appreciate their work and everything, or like their music or whatever. I mean, it's really neat, you know, and it's cool. And it's cool to sit around and me and Mike Moran sit there and name drop all day long. We go back and forth and everything. He was in the same thing. So it was like, yeah, it's interesting conversation. So, but yeah, it was fun meeting a lot of stars like that and everything. And
Well, Bruce, we could talk to you all day here, but sadly we only have an hour. But thank you so much for coming out here and talking with us.
No, thank you. And hey, you know, I mean, yeah, sorry about rambling on sometimes, like I was telling. I was saying it's really hard to once I get going, it's hard because, I mean, you know, you got to remember, you want to remember everything, and yet you want, you know, and get it out there. But yeah, the one thing I will say though is Brookings is magical town for me, you know. The 10 years that I've been here, a lot has happened, and I appreciate you guys having me on board here and everything so I could talk about it, because, you know, it's neat. It's neat. And you know, dream, believe, inspire, that's what it's all about right there. So I'm trying to inspire people to follow your dreams is basically, you know, it right there. So thank you for having me on here. And yeah, maybe down the line wherever we can get together again, and maybe I won't rabble so much and everything.
I doubt that, but
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. No, I doubt it too. It's going to be the same every time we talk.
But oh, yeah.
It makes
every
it more
time.
Fun. It makes it fun. But
yes.
Yeah, thank you for having me on board here. And yeah, I hope we got everything out.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I want to just tell everybody, I was just going to say, everybody, tune into the Bruin Report and the Bruin Conversations every chance you can. That's right. I'm going to give you guys a plug too. Shameless plugs are always good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is KCIW LP broadcasting at 100.7 FM in beautiful Brookings, Oregon.
For music credits for the preceding show, go to kciw.org/credits.